Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 430 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And this is our short topics episode, where you find out about news in the world of amateur radio and open source and things that blend the two together in the Linux in the Ham Shack way that we do every other week in short topics. Anyway, let's go ahead and tell you who we have tonight. We have the usual cast of characters. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
And I have not had nearly enough to drink, so I'm going to work on that while Bill skips over the lead topic we don't have and jumps right into amateur radio and hits this first one real quick. And you know what? It's still COVID. Still COVID.
Yeah. The news is out. COVID is still here, has not left. It's possibly here to stay, but we'll see. But yeah, this is the Japan Amateur Radio League. Ham Fair 2021 canceled. Posted on their homepage, which I might say is only missing some blinking text to be from the 90s. The Jarl Ham Fair 2021 scheduled on October 2nd. Saturday and the third Sunday has been canceled due to COVID-19. We hope to see you all again at Ham Fair 2022. Sad news. Yeah. From Tokyo.
Yep. So I did look at the website straight off of GeoCities.
Yeah. So. I was going to say GeoCities, but like, if it had blinking text or scrolling text, I would be like, oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it had lots of like bright colored stuff and anime looking things and Japanese characters and stuff like that. So yeah, it is what it is.
You know, there's a lot of people that have no clue what GeoCities is.
I know. Sort
well,
of
go look
of
at the
us,
journal
right?
website and you'll know what GeoCities is.
Yeah, there you
is.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. How true.
All right. Very good. So, yep, a short one. And yes, COVID is still affecting in-person events as the time moves on and we slog through COVID nest. So next we have a story about AMSAT. AMSAT 2021 Symposium and Annual Meeting changes to a virtual event. I wonder why that could be. Due to the lingering effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Oh, wow. Shocker. AMSAT has announced that its 39th Space Symposium, scheduled for October 29th to 31st, 2021. You know, it's going to be not too long before these AMSAT folks can have these meetings in space because, you know, with Blue Origin and SpaceX and all that stuff going on, I mean, they're sending civilians into space already. I wonder when AMSAT 2026 is going to be in orbit. So
a little expensive.
Yeah, maybe so. The symposium was originally planned to be held at the Crown Plaza Air Hotel in Bloomington, Minnesota. AMSAT President Robert Bankston, KE4AL, explained, quote, "Our membership has voiced its concern over the continued presence of the COVID-19 pandemic and the risks associated with long-distance travel and attendance at large group gatherings. In the interest of everyone's comfort and safety, we have made the difficult decision to return to a virtual meeting platform. If there is any good news in this, we know that last year's virtual symposium event was well received and that we have the opportunity to repeat its success this year. The dates for the virtual symposium will remain the same as was originally announced. The schedule will be reviewed by symposium organizers and adjusted as needed to accommodate the virtual setting. Persons who have already registered for the symposium will automatically receive refunds in the days ahead. Please watch for further announcements as they become available. Questions regarding the symposium should be addressed to info@amsat.com. And as you might expect, this story came from AMSAT. Amazing.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So Cheryl's over there, I know, and she can read this next short one. And then I'm sure Bill will opine after she gets done. So
I just heard you just have Bill do it. But
well, okay. I'm going to have you do it just so you can get a short, you know, quick one out of the way, and then then let Bill ramble on at length about it. So.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right. So our next topic is Jamboree on the Air, or otherwise known as JOTA, is the largest scouting event in the world. It's held annually the third full weekend in October, which is the 15th through the 17th this year. JOTA uses amateur radio to link scouts and hams around the world, around the nation, and in your own community. This jamboree requires no travel other than to a nearby amateur radio operator's ham shack. Many times you can find the hams will come to you by setting up a station at your scout camporee or at the park down the block, or perhaps at a ham shack already set up at your council's camp. And here comes Bill with all of his information.
Yeah, it's been slow going getting all this Jamboree on the Air and Jamboree on the Internet information out because, well, we all know the same thing that affects all the topics above this one in the show notes is affecting, you know, the people that actually do the organization of all these events. We did finally get the 2021 patch is out and available for ordering over at the Scout Shop. So that's really cool. And that they were able to throw that together and get that out and made. And I think I already ordered some. So I like to have some from the event, even if I don't participate, just because they're kind of cool to have. Yeah. And the registration link just opened up last week. JotaJoti.info. That's JotaJoti.info. It's the World Organization of Scout. Yeah, WASM, World Organization of the Scouting Movement, the international arm of scouting. They're the ones that organize this event. It's an international event. It's not just a USA event or anything else like that. So they recommend you register there. You can also get any of the digital assets that you need for, you know, if you do some of the internet stuff as well. They're going to have on ScoutLink, they're going to have Minecraft again. They have the virtual, I'm going to go over there right now because I'm not sure. Let's see. What are they going to have this year? They're going to have virtual stuff. That's how it's going to be. And yeah, if you run a station for your scouts, you know, just be mindful of local COVID regulations and everything else. So, you know, everyone should be safe and you should have a safe event. So don't put yourself in a situation that would make you not safe. For it. So yeah, expect it probably mainly online. Hey, there might be some stations that are going virtual this year that will share their stations across Zoom or Google Meets and stuff like that. So you can bring people into the shack and in a virtual manner and not have to have a bunch of, you know, kids that are not vaccinated near you. Cause, if you've been paying attention to your schools, I think my daughter gets contact traced, like 2 times a week since she started, but she hasn't got it. So, but yeah. So it's affecting everything. So, you know, just be mindful of that when you're planning your event. If you already have your small bubbles and whatever else for your troops and stuff like that, it's a good time to, if you're already getting the troop together, go ahead and throw a station in there and participate in the event. And then they have, like I say, tons of resources. There'll be more information coming out as it gets closer. We are about a month away. Yeah, basically just a month away right now. And I expect everything to kind of come out, you know, of their Jota Jody group. Like right now, if you click the internet link, it doesn't even show anything. So, but I know they always have Minecraft. So if you want to join a crazy scouting Minecraft server and you're into that, it might be a good time to do that with your scout. But yeah, it's coming up. Might talk about it again, probably a week out, maybe 2 weeks out. We'll see. As more information comes in.
All right. Very good. Lots of good information there about Jota and Jody and a month to prepare to get online or on the air with all those scouts. So very cool. Well, that's the end of our amateur radio specific topics tonight. So let's move on to Linux and open sourcey kinds of things. And the first thing we have is an update to OpenSSL because vulnerability, I'm sure. The OpenSSL Software Foundation today released a completely refreshed version of the software, OpenSSL, that handles much of the encrypted communications for the internet. The latest version, 3.0, adds compliance with the Federal Information Processing Standards, FIPS, deprecates with a plan to remove a slew of low-level API functions that could cases security issues.
I'm assuming cause.
Yeah.
Cause. I cut and paste this.
Yeah, security issues and has added much more testing. You know, it's not me going blind this time either. It's actually the wrong word. And has added much more testing to the development process. Reducing the number of low-level API functions means reducing the number of ways that developers could misuse or mistakenly use those functions. says Chris Eng, chief research officer at application security firm Veracode. The major version upgrade, quote, includes a number of architectural changes that will help developers reduce attack surface while still retaining the functionality that they may have come to rely on, unquote. Adding that deprecating the low-level API functions will, quote, discourage developers from tweaking the internals of individual cryptographic algorithms and steering them toward high-level APIs that are less prone to developer error, unquote. And that came from Dark Reading. Ooh.
Yeah.
Totally that new source. Cool. New sources. Always good to find new sources. So, all right. Yeah. So, make sure to update your OpenSSL because pretty much all your SSH traffic and everything else you do encrypted on the internet uses OpenSSL in one way or another. Updates coming your way. All right, Bill, we have more updates.
That's right. This is Linux 5.15, a great kernel release for AMD and Apple M1. So yeah, this is the release candidate 1 has already been pushed out. The Linux kernel is its development begins and in a sorry, I'm going to have to read this again. The Linux kernel 5.15, its development begins. Okay, this is worse than the other one. And in the time of its final version will arrive, which basically means it's coming soon. And what can already be seen from the code contributions, it will be a huge leap that will especially benefit users with the AMD Zen CPUs, as well as the Apple M1 SoC. So you can see some of the updates in the Realtek Wi-Fi drivers and the file systems, such as the NTFS provided by developer Paragon Software for the main branch of the Linux kernel, optimizations for XFS, EXT4, F2FS, ButterFS, as well as other improvements and fixes and better support for Apple's M1. But this all falls short for what's moving around AMD and Linux kernel 5.15. So yeah, AMD is getting a lot of buffing here in the old kernel here. For the desktop, the Ryzen processor, they're getting an audio driver fusion for Van Gogh APU, changes and fixes in the S2 idle codes for AMD for suspend and resume modes, because, you know, it doesn't suspend or resume properly. Temperature monitoring support for the AMD Zen 3 APUs, as well as for the Yellow Carp APUs. These will arrive with the Ryzen 6000 series. C3 management optimized for AMD CPUs, which will improve power in idle state. So that's all good stuff for the server, the EPYC, nobody cares about servers, right? Blah, blah, blah. The AMD KVM now supports 5-tier paging to handle higher memory capacities. Yay. Get 400 terabytes up there for memory or something, right? For graphics, the Radeon, new IDs have been added for the RDNA2 based GPU upgrades. The AMD Cyan Skillfish support for the APU design with Navi that has yet to be released. AMD GPU now leverages VKMS to enhance its virtual display code. So that means they're going to work a little bit better. Power management fixes for the AMD GPU controller, HDMI FreeSync, PCI Express link handling, and others. So gamers are going to be happy, 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 happy. And of course, this came from Linux Addicts. So yeah, it's coming.
All right. Very good. And that's it for Linux and open source specific topics. Now we're going to blend the Linux and amateur radio worlds together and talk to you about Linux in the Ham Shack. And we have a couple of interesting things here to finish out the topics for this evening. The first one is I have a quick addendum to episode number 428. This had to do with our discussion toward the end of the episode where we were talking about whitelisting entries and things like that, where it turns out that WinLink tends to block all traffic unless you specifically allow it. And it does give you a way to whitelist users and things like that. But we had an email follow-up that I actually received via WinLink, so that's cool. And I didn't have to whitelist that entry for it to come in, and it was all about how to get a message delivered via WinLink without having a whitelist set up. And when we get to the next deep dive episode, I'll, of course, get to the feedback. I think the call sign was like W3DC or WD3C or something like that. But we'll definitely get to the full reading of the feedback in the next deep dive episode, which, if you're listening to this, will be the next episode. But whitelists, of course, you can set up using the web interface for WinLink, but there's a subject line shortcoding you can use to get your messages to show up in someone's inbox. And what you have to do is you have to start your subject line with /// all uppercase WL2K space, a special priority code, and then a trailing /. And they have ways to do like priority messages, regular messages. So if you want to send a regular message to a WinLink user that hasn't whitelisted you, you start the message subject line with /// WL2K space /, and then the subject. And that will tell the system that you're sending a regular priority mail to a user who hasn't whitelisted you, and it will send them a message saying, you've got a message, do you want to accept it? And then they have the option of saying, yes, I would like to accept it, or no, I would not like to accept it. And then they can read your email or whatever, and then they can adjust their whitelist as necessary going forward, but you have successfully delivered a message to someone who hasn't whitelisted you. So there you go. And one other thing I learned after the episode, there is a functionality called aliases in the PAT HTTP and presumably in the PAT CLI as well. And in the configuration file, there's a section in the JSON for aliases. And what you do is you put PAT style or WinLink style, rather, URLs in there. And then they show up in the PAT HTTP or PAT CLI as just a predefined station. So I created stations with certain call signs on certain bands and set the URL to what it's supposed to be. And then you just have an alias so you don't have to find the stations every time you want to look them up. If you happen to be on 40 meters, you can have these aliases set. And if you want to know how to code the URLs, if you are in PAT HTTP, for example, and you bring up the RMS list and you click on a station, it will show you the URL for that station, including the frequency and everything. And then all you have to do is cut and paste that into the config file and then restart programming and it will show up in there. So that makes trying to find all the stations you are actually able to make RF connections with WinLink easy to find. And you don't have to go searching for them every time. And then we talked a little bit about the ability for it to fail over from one station type to another and then eventually fall back to telnet connectivity if you want to do that. Apparently, that's a function of PAT menu. And that's something you can set up and say, like, I want to group these three methods of connecting together, and then it will go from one to the next until one actually succeeds. But I don't think that's, like, default functionality. And I was messing around with both PAT menu and PAT menu 2, but they're very Raspberry Pi specific, and I was having a hard time getting them to work. I had to change a lot of, like, hard-linked code and stuff in it, and still couldn't get it to do what I want, so there's a video on YouTube by Cam4ACK and I think a couple others out there that sort of walk you through PAT menu, but they're really Pi centric. So I don't know if there's any other way to do this sort of method failover or station failover, but that was one way I did find. So that was all I had as an addendum. I'm sure there will be more updates about PAT and WinLink as time goes on and I find out more about it. But I have been able to successfully send and receive messages several times since that episode, both with the telnet network connectivity and via RF. It works. It's just not super intuitive. And I've been doing everything with RDOP. I have not yet successfully made a packet connection. Something I may work on in the future, but it's not working right now. Direwolf and AX25 hate me or something. And the only other thing I had was just a quick reference to something we will probably do a deep dive on, or at least flesh out a topic more in depth in a later episode. But there's a new logger that I found out about called HamRS, and it's
hammers.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with HamRS or hammer. Yeah, hammers. That's right. We're supposed to do that, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I didn't read the acronym. So hammers. Yeah. And it's supposed to be a contest logger. I guess you could use it for general purpose logging. It's not open source that I can see. I didn't dig around that much. It's released as an app image and also has a download for Windows and Mac OS. There's also a 32-bit version for Linux, and there's a build for Pi. And it bills itself as a lightweight, easy-to-use contest logger. It also has special logbooks set up for things like soda and poda and stuff like that. So you can log those things. I think it said there was even an Android version.
Yeah, there's an Android and an iOS version.
And an iOS version, right. So
I believe the iOS version costs money, though.
Okay.
Just because, you know, Apple. Right. It's a tax you pay to have an Apple device.
Right. It looks good. It has a nice, clean interface. The app image worked fine on my Ubuntu system. No problems at all. I didn't try the Windows or Mac OS versions yet, but I assume they work just the same. It's pretty easy to get through. Not a lot of configuration. It kind of handholds you through everything, setting up logbooks and stuff like that. So we'll talk more about this in a future episode. Did you have something else to say about it?
Yeah, I was just going to say I did download it, and I was first turned off because it said Ubuntu, and I'm like, okay, well, whatever. They got a deb or something there. But yeah, it is an app image, so you can run it on any system that is capable of running app images, which is almost all of them. So they should probably take that descriptor from Ubuntu and just say Linux.
Linux, right.
And that would probably be sufficient enough, because we all know this. In our world of Linuxy stuff. Yeah, and it looks like it supports just like a generic logbook, Parks on the Air, Summits on the Air, Field Day, and Winter Field Day right now. It does not support rig control, so don't expect this to be something that you're going to plug into your rig and use this every day. It's really meant to be a portable logger, kind of a special use case logger where you don't really care about it being, you know, tethered to the rig or anything else like that. It is nice. It does have does keep the frequency, like when you type it in for the next contact, so it doesn't wipe out the fields. I know some loggers that I've tried out in the past kind of cleared all the fields out every time you did a contact, which kind of made them useless, because if you're actually doing a run or something like that, it's not very useful. It does have the ability to connect up to, like, you know, QRZ and Hamlog, but it does fail back to hamdb.org. That the free one, and we'll look up call signs for you if you're connected to the internet. So it is it's pretty slick, it's clean, definitely web UI driven for sure. So I'm not sure how it's encapsulated. I haven't broke apart the app image to take a look at the insides, but yeah, it looks pretty clean and sharp, and has like a little mapper thing too, so your contacts can all be mapped for your log, so you can kind of see them, and they'll draw a line from your station and stuff like that. So yeah, pretty good. They're looking for feedback, and hey, this is the first bit of feedback. It looks good. Remove Ubuntu, change it to Linux, and the world will be all right again.
Yep, and then release it as open source, not just as an app image, and then it'll even be writer.
Yeah. Put a license file in there and everything else. Put it on the GitHubs.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Like I said, we may follow up on that, or that may be all that needs to be talked about, but go look for Hammers. The link, of course, to the application will be in the show notes, or at least the webpage where you can download the application for all those mobile platforms and your PC running whatever OS you happen to be running. Doesn't apparently support like OS 2 or Haiku or anything like that, but you know, the major stuff. So, yeah, check out Hammers, HAMRS. And Bill is going to tell you about some YouTubes. Stuff.
Yeah, the YouTubes. So yeah, I just went through episode 3 just to review what I did record before I ran into the deep dive on QSS TV and audio handling, which I, of course, I found out didn't work very well. I was able to sort of get it to work, but I don't consider that a complete solution. But I'm really chalking it up to it just needs some updating, the software itself. The software kind of is meh. Not so great. I'm going to go ahead and just wrap that episode up from there and probably publish that in the next day or two. So expect that'll be out. And then, who knows? We're going to see where we're going to go on episode 4 from there.
All right. Very good. I still have not had an opportunity to check out the first two that you released with the updates for Fedora 34, but I'm definitely going to do that at some point. But, you know, getting
thumbs ups, you know, thumbs ups.
Cool.
Click the subscribe button and mash the thumbs up button if you like it.
And click on the bell so you get notified when there's new videos.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell accent that was, but okay.
Yeah, whatever. We are getting quite a bit of views on it, so that's good. A lot of traction on it. I mean, not a lot of views, but, you know, it's going to be a while before I can catch up to the Ubuntu series. So, yeah, we're gonna keep on plugging at it, and we'll probably get a little more creative in episode 4. Maybe we'll do some compiling of something. So be on the lookout.
All right. Fantastic. Well, you know what? That actually brings us down to the end of the topics for tonight. So that was pretty much all the content we had for episode number 430, but we definitely have some other stuff we want to do before we get out of here. And the first thing we're going to do is talk about the social media roundup. We are going to let you know who's joined us on all the social media platforms out there. And I put it out in the tweet for the last couple of episodes that we've done. If anybody out there is using Telegram, we have linked Discord to Telegram. If you look for a Telegram server called Linux in the Ham Shack, if you just happen to be a Telegram user, you can link to it there and sign up, and then it will connect you in with the Discord chat, the general chat. So it's just for those people who use Telegram. I see people like signing up with Telegram almost every day. I get notifications of that. So people are using it. And if that's one of the platforms you want to use, especially if it's, you know, on a mobile device or something, you can connect with Linux and the Ham Shack on our Discord server using Telegram. Just wanted to put that out there. So who has joined us, or who is participating and financially supporting us this week?
Well, this week, our list of Patreons are Bryce Johnston, David Scarf, David Slaughter, Jim Lawson, Patrick Eng, Douglas Schock, Eric Guth, Brandon Rozek, John Spriggs, Robert Lewis, Robert Pitts, Douglas Redder, David Jakeway, Darren King, Cubicle Nate, Erno Costales, Samuel Vimes, Peter Caffrey, Richard Gordon, Paul Griffith, Jonas Rulo, Donald Gover, Herb Garcia, Steve Sainer, Steve Metcalf, William Heckelman, Randolph Smith, and Andy Webster. For subscriptions, we have Paul Mooney, Chris DeLuca, Andy Cowley, Eric Muller, Carl Backus, Isaac Gear, Thomas Foy, Michael Burdack, Kevin Ivey, Tony Coberly, Ronald Ikey, Johnny Kinsey, Peter Spots, Fred Cole, Bill Pioter, Jeffrey Boris, Robert Halliday, Wayne Hale, John Clark, Steve Hepler, Michael Jopling, Roger Pereira, Howard Dittmer, Todd Bowers, Michael Carey, A. Taylor, Dylan Engel, Jim McKenzie, Bill Collins, Robert Black, Darren King, Randolph Smith, Robert Yerke, Steve Biella, Alan Wilson, Mark Farrell, and Jeff Zimmerman. Nobody joined us on Facebook this week. On Twitter, we had @IronMillRadio, @F4FLO_Jerome, @PattyCasher, and at Jack Dubai. On YouTube, we had Peter Edript, Scott Haley, Mark Codwell, Rod W7ZRC, and C. Birchfield, or Field. On Discord, we had KJ5T, KI5QLY, Nathan, and Matt MC. Nobody joined us on the mailing list, and there were no merchandise sales this week.
Yeah, and I noticed something that I thought had happened, and I went back to check, and sure enough, there was someone who signed up on Patreon in August, and we have not mentioned them yet.
Which is Gary Tibbetts.
Yes, I threw that in there. So. Yes,
I see that now. Yeah, my text was moving around. I could figure out what was going on, but now I see that. So.
Yep, sorry, Gary, that it took so long to get the mention in from back in mid-August, I think. I don't know why you didn't show up in the list before now, but now you're there. So thank you. All right. That brings us down to the end of the social media roundup. So that only leaves us with the folks who are with us live in the chat tonight, who are listening to the episode as we were recording it and contributing their peanut galleryness to the whole affair. We had John K1BTZ, Tony K4XSS, Don KC9ZMY, Ted WA0EIR. Thanks, guys, for being here. We appreciate you. And with that, I guess. Oh, and Don KB2YSI just decided to pop up and say, oh, yeah, I'm here too. So let's not forget him. And I'm going to put you in the list right now. KB2YSI. Okay. So you're there. And thanks, everybody who supports the show, everybody who just downloads and listens. Make sure to send us feedback if you have any, info@lhspodcast.info or 909-547-7469. We love feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And we hope you tune in to the next episode, which will be a deep dive on something. As soon as we know what that something is, we'll let you know, which will probably be about recording time. So anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this one up. This has been episode number 430 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.